I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Philadelphia has been dealing with an epidemic of gun violence. Last year, there was a record number of homicides, 599, 85% involving guns, and some 2,000 people injured by guns. This year, there have been 200 fatal and 800 non-fatal shootings, including a mass shooting on South Street last Saturday night. Three people are dead, 11 were injured, while the crowd enjoying the warm weather ran for their lives. There have been two arrests, and yesterday the police department posted a video of a person of interest believed to have fired into the crowd. If you have any information, call 215-686-TIPS. That's 215-686-8477. Residents of the city are shaken, frustrated, angry, and frankly fed up with the ongoing level of gun violence and the apparent inability of the police, the DA's office, the mayor, and city council to make the city safer. Joining us is Danielle Outlaw. She is the Philadelphia Police Commissioner sitting across from me here in our Philadelphia studios. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. What's been the response to the posted video?
I think there's been a great response. The more information that we can share with any of these cases, but specifically this one, it not only is helpful for our investigation, but I think, you know, it helps us piece the pieces of the puzzle together much faster and allows us to work in a swift and expeditious manner.
I know two were arrested. You have this person of interest. Do you think there are others out there that you want to at least talk to, look at?
Well, at this point, you know, there were a lot of people out there. There were a lot of witnesses. And, you know, again, the more people we have in custody and the quicker we're able to do that, again, like I said, we'll be able to piece this together. You know, there's obviously more people that we'd love to speak to. But I'm happy with the progress of the investigation thus far.
Because people are calling the police department with information or cell phone information?
Well, again, there's a lot of evidence that we gathered from the scene. The release of the photos, again, and the video compilation was helpful for those who haven't seen it. It's on our website, www.phillypolice.com. But again, the more tips, the better. And people, again, you'd said, are frustrated, they're angry, and we typically see more people call our tip line, or they're more willing to come forward as witnesses when we have something like this happen.
A lot of people, myself included, clearly you have looked at this video, this fight that led then to the shooting. When you look at that video, what do you see? And they're three men, they're on the streets. It's kind of hard to describe on the radio, but there's a brawl that happens quickly.
There is a brawl. It happens very, very quickly. And because we were there, we were able to get there and, you know, get emergency services rendered. One of our officers were able to actively engage one of the shooters who we now have in custody. But, you know, this is something that can happen anywhere at any time. And I don't say this to instill fear in our communities, but I think it just goes to show with the proliferation of guns that we have out there, a typical, and I hate to say typical, but fights happen.
Right.
Altercations happen. Beefs, brawls happen. But when you introduce a gun into the equation, it can turn into something, you know, that happened this past weekend.
There were, according to the mayor, something like 70 police officers on the street on Saturday night on South Street, a very popular place for people to be. But when you look at that video, it seemed to those, at least to those three men, it didn't matter that there were police nearby. What does that tell you?
I think that tells us a lot. And I appreciate you mentioning that, because I think that that's a point that's really not being discussed. What we're talking about is a culture and a mentality, a culture of violence. You have individuals that are willing and made a conscious decision to do what they did, knowing that there were police present. That's what we're dealing with. It's one thing to address gun violence and its predictability. We know how to get ahead of retaliatory shootings. We know how to focus on hotspots. We know to put officers on foot when we have the resources and on bicycle to flood these areas, and also to focus on those who are the most likely to be a victim of crime or to be a shooter themselves. We know that. But where it becomes very, very challenging is when we cannot predict. And that's what happened this weekend. And the fact that we have individuals that mentally, again, made that decision to do that tells us that this goes far beyond a police response. We're dealing with the need to address minds and a culture. And again, that goes far beyond our enforcement efforts.
But the idea of the police presence not as a deterrence, that it didn't seem to make a difference on Saturday night.
It didn't on Saturday night, but that doesn't mean that we won't have a presence. It doesn't mean that it doesn't work in other equations. And it doesn't mean that the community doesn't want to see us there. So we're definitely going to continue to step up our presence where we can and increase our visibility, work with our law enforcement partners in order to help us do that. But Saturday, I mean, and, you know, I shared this in our press conference on Sunday. This wasn't normal. And we can't begin to normalize things like this and say, oh, this was Philadelphia. Stuff like that doesn't happen here on a regular basis. So we have to continue to look at this as an anomaly and say, what can we do, police and everyone else in the community alike, to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again?
I read a number of interviews with merchants, with people that have stores on South Street, and they described a kind of lawlessness that even before this shooting, there were people jumping on cars and, you know, throwing trash around. The idea that somehow this was okay.
Yeah, you know, I've spoken with merchants as well, and you know, there's a desire, obviously, not just from us, but just in general, to not have a permissive tone, to address quality of life issues. Some things aren't crimes, so when we have to be careful when we use words like lawless or crimes being committed, mm-hmm. because then I'll follow up and say, "Tell me what you mean by that." And it could be something that's not a crime, but it's things that make people feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's nothing against the law for being there, or for being loud, or you know, for kids being kids or whatever it is. But the ask, and it's a very fair ask, the ask is that when that line is crossed, if there is a lower level crime that occurs in our presence, you know, obviously we have to be smart about how we address it, but they want it addressed so we can set the tone early on and it doesn't balloon into something larger, which is what we saw later on that night.
As you said, this can't be normal, but sadly the sort of more street, almost like everyday shootings that happen in Philadelphia, that is in certain ways. That is our city to some degree. I mentioned the fact that last year almost 600 people were killed in this city, most of them because of handguns. What do we do about that?
Again, from the law enforcement standpoint, and I hear what you're saying, given that the number of homicides and shootings, let's not forget about the non-fatal shootings that occurred. It was a large number. It was a record number. But right. We can't normalize that either. Because when I go on to say as a resident, well, that's just what happens here, that sense of urgency is lost. And there's less of a willingness to be aligned and to work together. So I don't accept that. I refuse to accept that. On the law enforcement end, this mm-hmm. is what we do, right? We focus on those who are most at risk, meaning of being a shooter, the reason why it's important to use data and intelligence is because it's a small percentage of our population that's driving these large numbers. So we don't cast a wide net. We need to use our data and intelligence to focus on those individuals. We have to increase our visibility with the resources that we have. There's a lot of comparison of the years before, what was done. There's conversation, not just here today, about safe streets and having a cop on every corner. We don't have the same number of police officers to be able to do that. But we also know that our presence makes people feel more comfortable. So there's things on the enforcement end that has to be done. We have to make arrests, key arrests, but then there also has to be swift prosecution. We have to have prosecution for not just, again, we have work to do on our clearance rates with non-fatal shootings and our homicides, but we also have to ensure that those that are carrying firearms illegally are seeing consequences for doing such. So it's an effort across the board.
There was something like 2,296, so then almost 3,000 shootings last year. The clearance rate, the arrest rate for the Philadelphia Police Department, something like 17%. Does that sound right?
So, yes, for the non-fatal shootings, it's actually improved over time. At the beginning of the year, we put together something called a shooting investigations group. And the reason why I did that was to ensure that our non-fatal shootings were getting the same level of resources and attention that our homicides were, meaning that there's a direct connect to the DA's office. There's a direct connection with the technology and, again, leveraging of our partners in, you know, I call them the three-letter agencies, whether it's the ATF, DEI, or federal DEI, DEA, our federal partners, to make sure that we're putting the same amount of attention, as much as we can, on the non-fatal shootings. Because if we improve that clearance rate, mm-hmm. then that also serves as a deterrent to get that the homicide numbers lower as well.
But what do you think is driving the level of gun violence in Philadelphia? And it should be said, Philadelphia is not alone. This is happening in many cities across the country. But what is happening here in Philadelphia?
There's many things. And, you know, I'm going to sound like a broken record. People didn't like to hear what I had to say when we first realized what it was. I was told, stop blaming it on the pandemic. Not blaming anything on the pandemic, but we have to recognize that as one of the largest cities in the country, with the poverty rate that we already had pre-pandemic, all of those structural inequities were exacerbated. So we're talking about access to housing, access to wealth and capital, access to education, access to healthcare. All of those things were exacerbated, and it made a situation that wasn't ideal worse, meaning the learned hopelessness and helplessness that already existed in our communities was exacerbated. You can't ignore the fact that psychologically people were impacted by all of this. So, and I saw this, we saw this when we said, okay, the city said there's going to be a stay-home order, right? Those individuals who said, I'm going to shoot such and such, they didn't stay at home. It was an opportunity for them to see whoever it was out on the street and take action. Mm. So mentally, there was an impact there. There's more guns on the street. It's driven by narcotic sales, and there's fights over corners as well. So we know what's driving the gun violence, but there's also lack of fear of consequence for, again, carrying a firearm and using it in an illegal manner.
Are you saying the district attorney's office needs to get tougher?
What I'm saying it's more than the DA. The DA has a role in this, absolutely. We've had many of conversations about our points of views about the violation of the Uniform Firearm Act, which is VUFA, the VUFA arrest that we make. But we cannot ignore the fact, again, I'm going back to the pandemic, because the courts were closed. The courts were closed. So when we typically make an arrest, right, when we're talking about making arrests for somebody illegally carrying a firearm, because this individual didn't have the opportunity to go in front of a judge for a conviction, they are not a felon in possession of a firearm, meaning because there's no conviction there, we can't add that gun charge to them. So there's a lot of things at play here that have an impact on our ability to get some of the most serious people off the street. And I mentioned, I keep going back to the illegally carried firearms because we know that there's a pattern there. We know that some of our victims of shootings have open gun cases, or our shooters or our homicide suspects have either been shot before or, again, have had gun cases. So there's a common thread there that hasn't been addressed because of all these variables that we've seen over the 2 years that I've been here.
And we have 30 seconds before we have to say goodbye. The pandemic is still with us, although not the way it was 2 years ago. Do you see progress?
I do see progress in that the warm touch points that were once closed at the beginning of the pandemic are now open, which means our schools are open. Our young people that have been impacted by violence, we know how to get a hold of them. We know where they live. Our connections with the schools have been great. But now that the kids are back in school, we can make sure that if somebody's at risk in that school or we need to get a hold of them through our contacts through the schools, we can make sure that we do that. There's more things for people to do, and we're seeing a new norm. So I'm hoping that not only has a positive impact on the psyche of individuals, but our ability to connect with our partners in the area as well.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope you come back on Radio Times
as
well.
Absolutely.
You're very welcome. That's Danielle Outlaw. She is the Philadelphia Police Commissioner. We have three guests waiting in the wings as we carry on this conversation, talking about gun violence here in the city of Philadelphia. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. The mass shooting on Philadelphia's South Street this past weekend left 3 people dead, 11 others injured. It has shocked a city coping with an epidemic of gun violence, which we just heard from the Philadelphia Police Commissioner. So far this year, something like 200 people have been killed with guns in Philadelphia, nearly 1,000 injured in shootings. And we have 3 guests who will carry on our conversation. Joining us by telephone is Therese McCleary. She is co-founder of Moms Bonded by Grief, a support group for families who have lost loved ones to gun violence. She lost her daughter to gun violence. And Therese McCleary, thanks for joining us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Also with us and here in our Philadelphia studios, Reuben Jones, Executive Director of Frontline Dads. That's a social justice advocacy organization focusing on youth development and community empowerment. Reuben Jones, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And also with us is Rosalind Pichardo. She's a community advocate working in She is founder of Operation Save Our City, a trauma advocate at a local hospital. And Rosalind Pichardo, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And we have done so many interviews about the problem of gun violence in the city. And obviously what happened on South Street is kind of focuses the mind, but nonetheless, this is a kind of a daily occurrence. And I wonder to you, Teresa, if I can start with you. You've been working to reduce gun violence for more than a decade now. What are your thoughts today?
As my thoughts is that it's disturbing. It's very disturbing that there's such free access to these firearms that these children are walking around with. And the fact that they're able to get military-style weapons to have out here on the street is really disturbing.
Yeah, and certainly the military weapons used in Uvalde, Texas, and in Buffalo, New York. How about to you, Reuben Jones? What are your thoughts?
It's heartbreaking, particularly when we see what happened on South Street. I don't necessarily, and maybe we can have a dialogue about that, see it as a mass shooting in the context that we've seen across the country. And I think that it hits people differently when they see the imagery of folks running for their lives as if in a movie scene. But I do think that the tragic loss of life that we've experienced in this city is horrendous. It's unacceptable. And I think that we have to band together as a community and figure out real solutions in real time.
I want to get back to that. Let me get you, Rosalind, in on the conversation. How are you feeling today?
A bit overwhelmed by the mass shooting, but, you know, to be honest, I mean, we see shootings quite a bit, especially in my community of Kensington. So now we're faced with survival mode. What do we do in training folks on how to stop the bleed if someone is shot, especially our young folks? So it's been overwhelming training folks on how to do that, and sure, it's sad that we have to do that.
And you're talking about trauma. Right? I mean, this is traumatic trauma for individuals living in the city, but also a kind of a traumatized city, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And Commissioner Outlaw spoke a little bit on this about victims who are shot, who doesn't, if they don't address their trauma, then they themselves can become a shooter. So how do we treat folks for their trauma? We want to make sure that people aren't walking around the city with unaddressed trauma and plague the city with gun violence, being the fact that it's easy right now to get a firearm and that there's no legislation to stop people from getting long guns at gun shows. So it's so many things that need to be addressed on the forefront for us to combat this gun violence.
Teres, let me turn back to you. You co-founded Moms Bonded by Grief. I mentioned the fact that I'm so sorry that your daughter was murdered here in Philadelphia, and you helped to start this organization. And the title just frankly breaks my heart, Moms Bonded by Grief. How does that help you and other moms?
Me reaching out to mothers of victims of gun violence helps me get through my pain. I received so much love and affection when I lost my daughter that I just wanted to be able to give back. It took me years to get myself together because I had to go to therapy to be able to deal with my trauma. I had so much hate and anger and bitterness in me that I just couldn't control it. So I had to attend therapy myself to help me with my trauma, and I just wanted to give back. It breaks my heart every time I hear about a shooting because I know what the mother is feeling. I received that phone call, you know, and it's indescribable. So I just wanted to be able to give back and help them through the grief process. You know, my daughter was 21 when she was murdered, and she left behind a two-year-old little girl who I watch every day suffer in silence. And these last 2 years has been the worst of her trauma, her dealing with it.
I'm so sorry to hear that. And Rosalind, if you don't mind, I mean, you've also experienced the trauma of gun violence.
Yeah, I mean, early on in my life, when I was about 16, was a survivor of an attempted homicide. And that very same day, lost my boyfriend, Talbert Jackson, to murder by the person who attempted to take my life. I mean, then, you know, years later, as we talk about legislation, how easy it was for my twin sister to get a firearm, even though she was suffering from mental health illness, and she ultimately ended her life. Years to follow, 2012, my brother Alexander Martinez was murdered. Case is currently unsolved. So doing this work has allowed me to also, you know, heal, but also help families who's facing these difficult times.
Oh, I mean, I'm just so sorry to hear this. And I know for you, Therese, you've also lost other members of your family to gun violence, again, here in Philadelphia. And I don't want to belabor this because I know how painful it must be to talk about. But the fact that the two of you have been so hurt and in certain ways traumatized by gun violence. Therese, can you speak to that?
I have. My mother is one. She's the youngest girl of three daughters, eight brothers. My grandmother had 11 children. I lost five of them in South Philadelphia from gun violence. My only brother was murdered, my brother-in-law, my daughter. And then I had a little cousin that was home visiting from college, just had to get his braces taken off, still had his plane ticket in his back pocket, shot and killed in October of 2020. My nephew was murdered on MLK Day, January 2021. And although I have been through this, and I wasn't a stranger to death, the one that broke me was my daughter.
Yeah.
And when my nephew was murdered, it broke me again. But the worst part of all is the fact that I can't help my sister. Although I've been through this, I can't help my sister. You know, I try to help her navigate through this pain, but I understand what she's going through, and it's just going to take time, and it kills me because I'm not able to help her get through the pain.
Well,
it has to stop.
It has to stop. You're so absolutely right. And I'm sure just based on what I'm hearing from you, Therese, that you are helping your sister, even if it's, you know, it may not feel like enough. But I think that if you're there for somebody, you are helping them, even if they're still suffering and struggling. Ruben, it's, you know, it's just heartbreaking to hear the sort of level of trauma and violence affecting people in such a profound and personal way.
It's very difficult, even listening to Rez and Roz. You know, the reality is our city is in mourning, yeah. Right? And our city has not healed in a way that allows people to be free and happy and joyous. And when we look at, and she just said it has to stop, right? So
yeah.
When we look at just this year, 200 mothers have gotten that call. Right. Last year, almost 600 mothers got that call. And at some point, and I hope it doesn't sound too insensitive, but at some point, the leadership has to move past the rhetoric, the philosophies, the optics, the photo ops and all those things, and really figure out what is going on in the city and what this is going to take. Because these aren't situations that are like one size fits all in terms of a remedy, right?
So
we see South Street, we hear Therese's story, we hear Rod's story. I lost a nephew to gun violence, murdered, shot in the head. And each situation is completely different. But the constant is that someone had a mindset to want to callously take a life without fear of consequences, without remorse, without any connection to humanity. And in that moment, let's go back to South Street, that mindset of it's on site, when I see you, I'm going to get you. It doesn't matter if there's 70 police around. It doesn't matter if it's at a church, at a school, at a playground, at a supermarket, wherever it is where it's going to happen. And those are the kind of things that we have to get a grip on. And you know, we have people who are kind of playing both sides, straddling the fence with real solutions. Meanwhile, people are dying. So that's the heart of what our work is about, like getting to those solutions and making those changes happen.
Right.
So we don't continue to have this conversation. We don't continue to have this kind of loss and this amount of grieving and mourning.
Well, you talked about mindset. The commissioner talked about mindset as well. Roz, for you, I mean, we've done some shows in the past, and one of the phrases that stays with me is that hurt people hurt people. I mean, do you think in part we're talking about the sort of recreation of trauma? I mean, striking out maybe at somebody else?
I mean, my experience has been that, you know, the shooter who murdered my boyfriend and tried to take my life, he was a victim of violence himself.
He was.
He was shot in the face. And the reason why I had to leave was because he was paranoid, he was abusive, and turned him into someone that he wasn't. And that's what unaddressed trauma does. And I seen it firsthand, and this person turned into a complete monster. You know, he murdered Talbert.
That served, was your boyfriend at the time.
Yes. Served only 15 years in prison to get out of prison without me being notified, and then murdered again a woman by the name of Maria Serrano from Reading. So if you don't address this trauma, then you can become a monster like Donald became. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, a lot of us as activists and advocates, you know, we have to keep building each other up to continue to hit these streets. And no matter what organization you're from, no matter what form of activism you do, I mean, there's power in numbers. And I think that with this mass shooting and us getting together and uniting, I mean, the government, the politicians, the council people, they don't have a choice now but to listen, because now everybody's watching us. So now it's time for us to be loud and clear for people who can make change in Philly.
Terrence, let me get you back into the conversation. I know you have to leave us in about 5 minutes. You know, talking about solutions, I think all three of you have said that there are going to be no easy solutions. But from your perspective and from the work that you have done as co-founder of Moms Bonded by Grief, how do we address this? And is it a mindset problem? Is it more than that?
I totally agree with Rise and Ruben when they say that hurt people hurt people. So I can say for myself, I shared how bitter and angry I was. And if I didn't get counseling myself, you know, I was self-destructing. So people do need to address that part first. But then I just believe that we all need to get together, focus, strategize, and move out on some things that we want to be seen implemented in our neighborhoods, you know, to lessen all the violence that's going on. And I am a firm believer that the police can't do this alone. You know, they've tried, they're failing. I think that it's time to bring the National Guard in.
Yeah, it's interesting you said that. And the mayor, Mayor Kenney, was on Morning Edition this morning talking with Jennifer Lynn, and that came up. He said he's not going to bring the National Guard in, that their job is essentially to protect buildings and not people. Tara, it's just because I know that's something that you care about, and this is what the mayor said this morning. What else do you think would be effective in terms of reducing this level of violence and making people feel more safe?
So if I can just step back and
sure.
Address that for a minute, please.
Sure.
How is it more important to secure buildings and protect buildings than human life? We're losing our babies out here. You know, we're losing children under the age of 14 years old. It was necessary to bring them in to protect City Hall when they were looting, to protect the stores when they were looting because of their economy, their revenue. They was afraid to lose it. But it's not necessary to bring them in to protect our children.
Hmm.
Someone has to make that make sense to me.
I hear you. What else, Therese?
Us working together. We all need to get together, stand together strong, and we can make change. As Ruben stated, there was almost 500 families that lost loved ones last year. The year prior, 400. So far now, we're at 210. If all of us unite, storm to Harrisburg or City Hall and demand change, someone is going to listen to us.
You're nodding your head.
Yeah, you know, it's so many multifaceted things that need to happen. And among these groups, organizations and people who are uniting, like Ruben has a mentoring group that can focus on the kids. You have my group who focuses strictly on survival mode and on the boots on the ground. And you have Therese who can deal with the mothers who are grieving and the families who are grieving, that whatever pain they're going through, they don't hurt people, because at times hurt people hurt people. Mm-hmm. You have Mothers in Charge. You have Bilal Qayyum. You have all of these organizations that each of them have a really powerful strong suit. So if we can sit collectively at a table and just bump up the numbers of each of our groups and hit certain areas where the violence is happening, like in numbers, we can make more of an impact. But sometimes a lot of the organizations, everybody's doing their own thing. And sometimes it just takes time for us to step back, check our egos, and hit the street together. I think that's what needs to happen. But everybody, each group needs help. It's not enough of us. It's not enough of me. It's not enough of Ruben. It's not enough of Therese. Not enough of Dr. Dorothy. Not enough of Bilal. It's just not enough of us. And I think that it's unfortunate. We don't want to wait to lose another life to have people join forces. We want to do it before more lives are taken. And that's what needs to happen.
Well, I'll tell you what, we have to take a very short break, and we have to say goodbye to Therese McCleary. Therese, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times. And we wish you all the best.
Thank you.
You're
Take
welcome.
Care.
You too. She's co-founder of Moms Bonded by Grief. Ruben Jones staying with us for the rest of the hour. He is executive director of Frontline Dads, a social justice advocacy organization. They focus on youth development and community empowerment. And also with us is Rosalind Pichardo, founder of Operation Save Our City. She's a trauma advocate at a local hospital. We are talking about the problem, the trauma of gun violence here in Philadelphia. And as always on Radio Times, we want to hear from you. We want your ideas. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and we're talking with some Philadelphia advocates about what to do about the causes, the solutions, resources needed to make Philadelphia's neighborhoods safer, to reduce the problem, the level of gun violence. And again, staying with us are Ruben Jones and Rosalind Pichardo. Let me read a couple of comments. I'll put this to you, Ruben. This is from Julie. She tweeted, "The root causes are unequal education, housing, and employment. This is where it all needs to start. There are no politicians that are courageous enough to take that on." Do you agree with Julie? And, you know, those are three big issues. Is that where we start?
I agree 100%. Just to give you a quick narrative about the poverty. This city, along with many others, experienced riots back in the 60s after the murder of Martin Luther King, right? Most of the major cities went up in fire. This city has neglected specific communities ever since. So we're talking about a 50-year run of poor schooling, poor housing, poor policing in those neighborhoods, an influx of drugs and guns, a high rate of unemployment and homelessness. So this ends up being a culmination with 50 years of childhood traumas being visited upon generation after generation. You throw in the pandemic, and then we end up with this result where, as Roz mentioned, a bunch of hurting people who never got help, who never got any treatment for that harm, going back to their grandparents and great-grandparents in some cases. So, you know, I think that one of the things that we have to do is invest in these communities who's been neglected. Right there in North Philadelphia used to be a hub of commerce. You had Botany 500 at Broad Lehigh. You had Tasty Cake on Hunting Park. You had Bud Manufacturing Plant on Hunting Park. And these factories created thousands of jobs. Their area thrived. There was the
good paying job.
Philly Stadium right there, 22nd and Lehigh. So you had an area that I grew up in that was, you know, saturated with employment opportunities, and folks were doing okay. None of those places have been replaced. What we found is in the 80s and 90s, drug wars did ensue. So the very grandmother who took care of young children on the block now became addicted. The fathers either got killed or went to prison. So we've seen the communities depleted of resources, and we've yet to have a real infusion of resources and a real investment in those communities in a way that allows them to thrive. So one of the things that I believe is needed is, A, we need grief counseling in every Philadelphia public school. It should be provided for from kindergarten to 12th grade.
Grief counselors in every public school.
In every public school. I think we need a community hub in every neighborhood. Every maybe 4 to 6 blocks should be a community hub where folks can go to and get the help they need. I think we have to reinvest in those 40,000 properties that are vacant across the city and make them available for housing. You know, Roz talked about Kensington. When you look at the pictures of Kensington or drive through or walk through, and you see people sleeping in tents or on the ground, that's horrendous for us to just accept. But we write them off because they're quote-unquote drug addicts, right? You mentioned some of the violence when it's inflicted upon folks who quote-unquote deserve it, right? Because once we can label someone as a gang member, we label them as a troublemaker or convicted felon, we're not as concerned with the outcome of their lives. So if we could turn that around and make people feel whole, welcome, and a part of this city, then I think you'll see mm-hmm. that mindset to change. The commissioner talked about the culture of violence, and she's absolutely right. There's a culture of acceptance, and one of the main culprits, I know people don't want to hear this, we don't hold Hollywood accountable, we don't hold the music industry accountable, and we don't hold the gaming industry accountable. These kids are playing video games that are recklessly, of course it's what they call fantasy violence, but they're recklessly taking lives, and they become kind of desensitized to the actual loss of human life. So there's a combination of things that we could do immediately to begin to turn the table.
Let me turn back to you, Roz. And I was looking at a documentary made of you. In fact, I posted that documentary on our Facebook page so our listeners could watch it. And you are in Kensington, you know, handing out teddy bears and water and talking to people and trying to help in a sort of one-to-one kind of way to at least have someone feel like they have some kind of human contact.
I mean, at times, I mean, I was born and raised in Kensington, and I've learned that in my neighborhood, I literally have to meet people exactly where they are.
Yeah.
Not trying to change them at the moment, but meet them exactly where they are. Because at times when they're faced with different folks, you know, they get those negative names like addict and junkie and zombie and all of these things, you know. And along the years, you know, calling them my sunshines.
You call them your sunshines.
I do. That's the name of the documentary.
It is.
It's called Hello Sunshine. And just, again, meeting people where they are and just, you know, providing food, but also knowing what else is around me, coexisting with shooters, knowing that one block away, there's someone who's dealing, and I know that they carry a gun, and having to coexist and say, hey, I know what you have. And I know that you're not willing to give this up.
You
and I
to
also
them?
Absolutely. And I know that you have kids. So here is a gun lock. So if you're home and your kids are home, I want to make sure your kid's alive. You know, showing folks how to use these gun locks. And then again, you know, showing folks how to use administered Narcan, the overdose reversal drug. So literally living in survival mode in my community has been my focus right now because dead people cannot recover. And again, you know, you have dealers on the street who are not willing to give up their guns and are not willing to leave the corners. So how do we keep them alive long enough so that when that time comes, they're here to move forward to a job or to whatever good opportunities that they have if it's presented to them, and just keeping people alive. We're literally on survival mode, you know, teaching people how to stop the bleed with the tourniquets on this new project called Operation Stop the Bleed.
Yeah, and Ruben talked about grief counselors in every school, and I saw you nod your head like, yes.
I mean, I work for another agency, and art has been a really, really big component in what I've been teaching the students through the DEA program that I've been facilitating with schools across the country, actually, and teaching kids with art, you know, that art is healing and providing, and working with other artists like Catherine Pennebaker with the Healing Blanket Project, providing spaces for people to heal. And art didn't do that because, again, schools have taken away music programs. They've taken away all of these home economic programs, woodshop, all of these things that, that made these creative minds move and be able to want to do more. But now all those programs are gone in schools, so we have to create something.
Here's an email from Doug. I'll put this to you, Ruben. He says, a stop and frisk sounds like the only policy that can reduce gun toting in the city. Of course, it should be applied proportionally to young men of all races. I mean, and I've heard other people say, look, we need to bring this back. I know it has a very checkered track record, but what are your thoughts about that?
So stop and frisk is not something that I would support. In fact, I openly oppose it for a number of reasons. Number one, it's racist in its application as a target, specifically young black men. But also, it was ineffective, right? You know, there have been studies that shown
in New York,
I think, very small percentages of guns, very small numbers of guns were found in the stop and frisk stops. So stop and frisk makes no sense. And with all due respect to Sister Therese, sending the National Guard doesn't make sense either. Like, at the end of the day, we have a 6,000 police force in this city, and if that's not going to be good enough, then sending in the National Guard and declaring martial law, it won't benefit. In fact, it would probably turn the city upside down with people protesting, demanding that their civil liberties not be taken away in the name of public safety.
We were actually talking with the commissioner before going on the air, and I think there was some agreement here, but we're also talking on the air with her about the fact that there was this police presence on South Street, but that did not stop the violence.
Which lends itself to a very difficult conversation that we haven't gotten to yet, and that is, what's actually driving this violence? There's a mentality. There's a specific mindset. So let me just break down some numbers really quick. In the city of 1.5 million people, and this is going to sound really callous when I say it, but they're just numbers. In the city of 1.5 million people, right, we had 600 murders last year, which is atrocious, right? Every one of those 600 families are grieving a loss that will never be replaced. But in the city of 600 people, that represents less than 0.1% of our population, right? So it's not like we're living in the wild, wild west, and every minute of every day, folks are running around shooting folks. Yeah, it happens, and it's tragic. And again, we're here as advocates to prevent that loss. We're here to advocate for resources and for change. So I don't want anyone to misconstrue what I'm saying. So what I'm saying is, a small percentage of people who are actually committing these acts. And we should be able to, with laser focus, pinpoint who those folks are and be able to prevent some of these actions from happening. And that's how we begin to save lives and turn this around. If we just throw a blanket over the city and call in the National Guard and declare martial law and say everything is going to be, you know, ran through the police department, then we lose. I think the answers are at the community level. The city has the resources and ability to enact a plan, but the answer is going to be at the community level where folks, you know, you can't count how many lives rides have saved. We give out gun locks as well. We in the communities, we do safe school guards, we do all these other things. And those are not measurable when it comes to how many people have not died, right? The only thing we can count is the people who die. And again, as tragic as it is, I just want to emphasize that 99.999% of the population in this city are not killing people.
That is true. And yet, as we heard from Roz and also from Therese, one death, one murder has a kind of reverberation among family and friends and community, mm-hmm. so that so many people
and it does.
Are,
and I don't want to discount
I know
that.
What you were saying, yeah. yes, and obviously many more people have been shot and didn't die. I just want to read, the City Council actually did a study looking at the problem of gun violence, finding that half of the shootings in Philadelphia sparked by arguments. That appeared to be the problem on South Street. Most of the guns used were bought in Pennsylvania. This is something I'm quoting from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Many suspected shooters and victims had previously been arrested or received mental health services from the city. The majority had also witnessed violence. And Rosalind, if I can go back to you, I mean, it sort of encapsulates the problem, I think, that we've been talking about.
I mean, yeah, that's true. Some of the, you know, things that they've said, but also, you know, social media plays a really big role in a lot of the stuff that happens among the youth. So there's always a lot of beefs on Instagram about music and all of these things that sometimes lead to violence. But also you have the amount of drugs that are on the street, the amount of the fact that fentanyl isn't everything. So now you have all these new corners. You know, you have one corner on the top of the block and you have another corner on the bottom of the block, two selling similar things. Now you got a beef between two dealers. So that's an issue as well. But then again, you have families who are you know, affected by this, who live on this block, who's watching this day in and day out, and then the sons get mad, trying to get the dealers off the corner or off their steps, and becomes another issue. So it's like so many things that you know, that's overwhelming, that's causing the loss of life in this city.
Yeah.
And, you know, so many of it needs to be addressed. But again, us policing our own communities is also key. Like, we have to be out there doing the work. We have to be visible. And we also have to be, you know, transparent to the people who want more services, that sometimes there isn't enough services or there isn't any services that could meet their needs. Because, again, this city is struggling. I mean, we're all struggling here, even as an activist and an advocate in getting supplies to saving people. You know, sometimes I struggle myself.
Sure. Sure. But, I mean, so is there no role for the mayor, for city council, for government, for even the...
I mean, they need... I mean, to be honest, I feel like, you know, a lot of times the mayor can say a lot of things, but is not doing enough. You know, he says a lot of things, but I have yet to see him in the 1-I-1-3-4 zip code to see what I see every day.
Right. You want him to go out on the street?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Of course. I want you to see what I see. I want you to experience what I see as an advocate, as a crisis responder. How many shootings happen? How many overdoses we're seeing? How many of these facilities that are around me are struggling to keep the resources that they have to keep families afloat? To see the folks, my sunshine, struggling and there's no rehab centers for them to go. To see that there's 200 men standing in the corner, and there's only five of us out there trying to talk to 200 people is not enough.
We're almost out of time. Ruben, final words from you.
Yeah, I think that there's no easy answer. There's no overnight solution. There's no magic formula that we could strike up in this moment and make things different or better. But I think that if we invest in a long-term solution, with collective power in the community, with a humble leadership, with bold ideas, or at least willing to listen to bold ideas, then I think we could turn it around. I think at this point, we're just scrambling at every news report about another murder,
yeah.
and we're trying to kind of outpace each other with sensationalism and, you know, I don't know. I'm just, like, really frustrated and hurt at this point that we continue to have the same conversations over and over without a real plan, without a real solution, without real leadership. So I'll end it there. I just think that the hope is that we can get some folks in a leadership position who's willing to not only listen to the community, but as Rod spoke, we don't see our leadership out in these communities every day where folks are bleeding and dying and hurting and starving. We don't see it. We see press conferences from City Hall or from nice spaces, but you got to get down with the grime and the dirt and the hurt and hear the folks in order to respond to the folks.
Well, I appreciate you joining us. I appreciate the work you're doing, and thanks so much for joining us today on Radio Times. A lot of emotion today. That's Reuben Jones, Executive Director of Frontline Dads, Rosalind Pichardo, founder of Operation Save Our City. Go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times under Programs. You can also download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show is produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you for joining us.